Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 19 through 21. Neither shalt thou steal, neither shalt thou bear false witness against thy neighbor, neither shalt thou desire thy neighbor's wife, neither shalt thou covet thy neighbor's house, his field, or his manservant, or his maidservant, his ox, or his ass, or anything that is his neighbor's. You may be seated. General Ulysses S. Grant, prominent general for the North in the war between the states, became president of the United States in 1868, serving from 1869 to 1877. His birthplace was in a home that is visible from Ohio Route 52 between New Richmond and Moscow in Point Pleasant, Ohio. Most Americans are unaware that Ulysses wasn't his real first name. His real name was Hiram Ulysses Grant, was stuck with the name Ulysses S. Grant due to a mistake made by Senator Morse on his application form to West Point. The S in his middle name was from his mother's maiden name and his brother's name, Simpson. It was never a part of his real name. He tried to get it corrected, but once it gets there, it's very difficult to get it corrected. He just gave up on it. But most people are surprised to learn that his wife had slaves on her farm known as White Haven, just 10 miles southwest of St. Louis. Ulysses lived there with his wife from 1854 to 1859. Grant managed the farm for his father-in-law, Colonel Dent, for 5 years until just 2 years before the war started. Ulysses worked with the 30 slaves that lived on the farm. The slaves lived there until they were freed from slavery after the war between the states. Grant was the northern general that Robert E. Lee surrendered to in Appomattox, Virginia. Lee freed all his slaves before the war began. So was the war about slavery? And what about America's pastor, Billy Graham? I had to say something about Billy. There is need to talk about what his life did to this country. His dead body has been transported to several places so that many of the American people can pay their respects and visit his coffin. On Wednesday, it was in the Capitol Rotunda before it traveled to North Carolina and his library for his funeral just last Friday. And do you know where Billy Graham was born? He was born on November 7th. 1918, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, on a family dairy farm. He grew up in Scottish Presbyterian heritage, milking cows twice a day and doing the basic farm chores. Now, there's a picture of his house. Beautiful garden. As a teen, Billy attended a meeting by Dr. Mordecai Fowler Ham, a Baptist evangelist who taught many British Israelite views. He believed that problems involving liquor could best be resolved by conversion to Christianity and the placement of new believers in churches which stressed abstinence of alcoholic beverages. Ham was publicly and vehemently anti-Semitic, they meant anti-Jewish, and anti-Catholic. He was a revivalist who considered Jews beyond redemption. Billy said he finally came to understand his need for a personal relationship with Jesus at Dr. Ham's meetings. He felt that the Graham family's consistent Bible reading, prayer, and church attendance was valuable, but he still felt empty inside, restless, and resentful of all the work he was doing to earn his way to heaven. Near his 16th birthday in 1934, Billy went forward at a Dr. Ham meeting and committed his life to Christ. After his conversion, Billy wanted to go to church as much as possible, and admittedly even began to sing hymns while milking the cows. Billy's heart was completely surrendered to Jesus Christ at that point, and the foundation was laid for his future ministry to people around the world. My wife and I were surprised to see the Graham Birth Home as we drove up the main road to the 2,300-acre PTL Heritage USA. We had just spent the night in South Carolina, just a few miles from the site, and where the people we were staying with, they said, "You've got to go see this." So we took the time and went up there and saw it. What did Billy Graham have to do with PTL, we thought? We were surprised to see his birth home there. Well, some years previous, Jim Baker, PTL's founder, purchased the building and had it moved the 15 miles from Charlotte, North Carolina, where Mr. Graham was born. Billy Graham's nephew, Mel, took the home apart brick by brick, and moved it to 15 miles and then reassembled it. What a job that was. And there it stood at the entrance of Heritage Park USA in South Carolina. Scandals had already broken out, and Heritage USA would never be finished as it was originally planned. But I thought that was where Billy Graham had been born. But I was wrong. That was the home that Billy grew up in, but the home had been moved 15 miles from Charlotte, North Carolina, to Fort Mill, South Carolina. And after PTL collapsed many years later, the new owners offered the home back to Mel. Mel was getting too old to take everything back brick by brick, so he hired contractors to move the home once again, brick by brick, back to North Carolina to where Billy's library. And that's where it is today, in Charlotte, North Carolina, on Billy Graham Parkway. It is located a few miles from where Billy was born and reared. And there's a picture of the Billy Graham Library in North Carolina, and that's where the funeral was held, right there. Evangelist Billy Graham recalls in his book the pivotal point in his young ministry when, during a 1949 Los Angeles crusade, a two-word directive from publisher William Randolph Hearst to Puff Graham made him an instant celebrity nationwide. And you get this from American Idol and this thing. Whoever they push, that's who they can make them big-time stars. Until this happened, Graham was one of thousands of obscure young preachers. He dropped out of Bob Jones University. Bob Jones University was a very conservative university. When he went there, there was no interracial dating allowed. They have since changed. And he went to a couple other Bible colleges. He preached in a small church in Illinois and then joined with the Youth for Christ organization. He then started having crusades. He had one in California that was very underwhelming. But something happened during that crusade that changed the image of Billy Graham to the day that he died. A fellow Freemason, Randolph Hearst, one of the wealthiest individuals in the United States and the owner of newspapers, magazines, television, radio stations, put out the word to make Billy Graham a celebrity. Soon after this was accomplished, the Freemasons had their charismatic preacher of their new world order. Newspaper published glowing reports about how good a preacher he was, and magazines began putting his picture on their covers. He met the Pope, Martin Luther King, presidents of the United States, and held crusades in England, Korea, and a whole host of countries in Africa and the Middle East. He held meetings in 185 different countries. He was the ecumenical, Roman Catholic / Protestant preacher of the century for the establishing of the New World's Order, One Church. Graham ended racially segregated seating at his Southern Crusades in 1953. You mean that in the South, when you had a crusade, you had racially segregated seating? He ended it a year before the Supreme Court's school integration ruling and refused to visit South Africa while its white regime insisted on racially segregated meetings. From the very beginning, Roman Catholic priests, as well as most of the Protestant preachers of the area where his crusades were held, attended Graham's rallies and many of the supposed decisions for Christ and supposed converts were gently and lovingly ushered straight into the Roman Catholic Church system. This tells us of the true heart of Graham to start with. Here's a quote from Billy Graham. "I've found that my beliefs are essentially the same as those of Orthodox Roman Catholics," unquote. To understand Billy Graham and his involvement in the ecumenical movement, we must understand his relationship with Rome. While the principles of Eucanism can be traced back for centuries through the Gnostics, Rosicrucians, Freemasons, and of course the Parliament of World Religions, it was Rome's Vatican II that officially launched the modern ecumenical movement. Vatican II opened the doors of Roman Catholicism, which the world largely views as the oldest form of Christianity, to all other religions of the world. Therefore, Vatican II is often referred to as the Ecumenical Council. As such, as the relationship of Billy Graham developed with the Vatican and the popes, his views became increasingly ecumenical. This has confused many people because they don't make the Rome connection. Graham, like many other Protestant evangelicals, seems to be working to fulfill not the Great Commission, but the mandate of Vatican II. Once this is understood, the rest of what Billy Graham has done begins to make sense. Billy Graham was the eighth wealthiest preacher in the United States. His net worth was calculated at $25 million. Though he never publicly acknowledged it, Billy Graham was a 33rd degree Freemason. This is not a matter of opinion because it is in fact stated very clearly in the Freemasons' own history book. And I have a picture of it, The History of Freemasonry. In the book by Freemason authority Albert Gallatin Mackey, the following commentary is presented by the publisher on the inside flap. Quote, "George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, John Hancock, Mark Twain, Henry Ford, Billy Graham, Arnold Palmer, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Franz Haydn, Voltaire, Joseph Wolfgang, and it's always other people, are Freemasons." And then I have a chart. The Jesuit order is over the Freemasons, Knights of Columbus, Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, B'nai B'rith, all these different organizations. So if you're Freemason, you're under the Jesuits. America's most beloved pastor, Billy Graham, was a lifelong Democrat and 33rd degree Freemason. He was also an ancient agent of Rome. When asked about the Pope, he said, quote, "He and I agree on almost everything," unquote. At his crusades, during altar calls, Catholics were directed back to the Catholic Church, and Jews were sent back to the Jewish synagogue. Thus, the faith of new converts was sabotaged. Even more, Billy Graham praised cults like Mormons who taught that Buddhists, Muslims, and non-believers would be saved. Graham found himself at times in controversy over a disappointing stand on gay rights as well as over a secretly recorded conversation with Nixon in which Billy Graham complained that Jews had too much influence on the United States media. In the later years of his career, he intentionally muted his political beliefs to focus on the gospel. The chat followed a February 10, 1972 prayer breakfast the two men had attended. The Vietnam War was raging, and Nixon was often very focused on his reelection campaign. On one of the tapes, Graham responded, quote, "This stranglehold has got to be broken, or the country's going down the drain," unquote. That line was picked up by the media at the time and included in some of his remembrances following his demise. "You believe that?" Nixon said, seeming to be pleasantly surprised with affirmation of an anti-Semitic, meaning anti-Jewish streak, that courses through many Nixon Oval Office conversations. "Yes, sir," Graham said to Nixon. N.H.R. Haldeman, the Nixon top aide later in prison for his role in the Watergate cover-up, who was apparently in the room for most, even all, the conversation. "Oh boy," replied Nixon, "so do I. I can't ever say that, but I believe it." "No, but if you get elected a second time, then we might be able to do something," Graham replied. Graham referenced friends of his own in the press who were Jewish and how they, quote, "swarm around me and are friendly to me," unquote. But he added, "they don't know how I really feel about what they're doing to this country." It got worse. Nixon brought up a topic of which he said, "we can't talk about it publicly. The alleged influence of Jews in Hollywood and the press." He referenced an executive with the 1968 to 1973 NBC hit show, Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, and once informing him that 11 of its 12 writers were Jewish. "That right?" said Graham. Nixon seamlessly continued by asserting that Life magazine, Newsweek, The New York Times and the Los Angeles Times are among those totally dominated by Jews. And he said, the famous broadcast network anchors Howard K. Smith, David Brinkley, and Walter Cronkite were front men who may not be of that persuasion, but their writers were 95% Jewish. "That's right," agreed Graham, who would further aid and abet his host's declaration that a powerful block of media Jews confronted Nixon, and they're the ones putting out the pornography stuff. When the tapes were made known, Graham apologized to leaders of the Jews. Graham said through a spokesman that he could not respond regarding the transcript because he didn't remember it. He would later issue a written apology and meet with Jewish leaders. But he forever maintained that he could not recall the conversation. I would imagine that Graham couldn't recall this statement by Jewish leader Menachem Begin, who was the sixth prime minister of Israel. Here's what he said. "Our race is the master race." Was that Hitler? "We are divine gods on this planet. We are as different from the inferior races as they are from insects. Other races are beasts and animals, cattle at best. Our destiny is to rule over the inferior races. The masses will lick our feet and serve us as our slaves." Menachem Begin. We have seen that Billy Graham was a servant of money, $25 million, not God. Was a Freemason and thus a servant of Lucifer, the light bearer. He served the Roman Catholic Church He lived a worldly life, embracing his celebrity status in Hollywood. He got a Hollywood star, like all the others. He secretly knew about the stranglehold the Jews had on America's media, because they made him a big star. He secretly knew about the Jewish stronghold on the pornography industry. He secretly knew about the Jewish writers on the television broadcast networks, news anchors. He promoted false doctrine. He proved the alien narrative and promoted the one world religion of the New World Order. But it's abundantly clear that Billy Graham was far from a godly man, and that he played a central role in leading millions of people towards the apostate Roman Catholic Church and the idea of a one world religion. He was the preacher for the Freemasons, the preacher for Lucifer. I don't care very much for what he did. America is like it was in the days of Judea during the life of our Savior. In John chapter 4, 13, however, no man spoke openly of him, referring to Jesus the Christ. Why not? For fear of the Jews. Speaking of Roman Catholics, do you know that the Catholics have a different Ten Commandments than all non-Catholics have? Deuteronomy chapter 5 contains the Ten Commandments that the Lord God of Israel spoke to his covenant people at Mount Sinai. The Roman Catholics have eliminated one commandment and split another commandment into two. So we got the Catholics and we got the King James Bible. The first commandment is the same. I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods between me. The second commandment, Roman Catholics say, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The King James Bible doesn't say that. Thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to them, nor serve them. Then the Roman Catholic third one, remember to keep the Holy Sabbath. Well, King James, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. The Catholic's fourth, honor thy father and mother, well, that's the fifth commandment in the King James. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. That was the third. Their fifth commandment, thou shalt not kill. King James, honor thy father and mother, which was the fourth. Oh, there's the sixth commandment. Is the fifth commandment or sixth commandment? The sixth, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, the seventh commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Their seventh commandment, you shall not steal, thou shalt not steal. Eighth commandment, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. There's not bear false witness could be. Now here's where it changes. They split the Ten Commandments into two. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. And the Tenth Commandment, thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house. Boy, I'd like to ask a Roman Catholic about that. Billy Graham was converted, supposedly, under Mordecai Ham, who was anti-Catholic, anti-Jewish. Billy Graham switched it to 180. The Catholic religion's traditional way of enumerating the Ten Commandments takes away the second commandment against making and bowing down to images and makes the tenth commandment into two separate commandments. If you follow the chart all the way down from the second commandment, you'll see the Catholic religion is always one ahead of the King James and other non-Catholic Bibles. Finally, at the tenth commandment, they break it into two and make it the ninth and tenth commandment. They reject the second commandment so they can keep their own tradition. The Catholics have a host of false images they are taught to bow down to and worship. They teach that it's not a sin because God made no commandment against it. They don't have the second commandment that God gave to Israel. They omit it completely. And I'm going to read the second commandment again. Thou shalt not make thee any carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water beneath the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, nor serve them. What God you want to serve? For I, the Lord thy God, am a jealous God, visiting iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them who hate me. Their cathedrals are full of images that they are taught to bow down and worship. Now, I found this website, and I wonder, on which website did I see this statement about the situation between Protestants and Catholics? It said, unity between Protestant and Roman Catholics is impossible. For any Protestant who joins himself to Rome can no longer be called a Christian, let alone a Protestant. It's in the from the website Purely Presbyterian. Now, Billy Graham was a Presbyterian when he was a child. His parents were Presbyterians. The website goes on to say, she, the Roman Catholic Church, is the mystical Babylon from which the pious are commanded to come out as a most corrupt society diametrically opposed to the mystical Zion, the true Church of Christ, and incompatible with it. John's description belongs exactly to her alone, especially as to the two marks by which he distinguishes her, that she is a seven-hilled city who sitteth on seven mountains, and that she obtains power over the kings of the earth. There are still a few Protestants who are not completely deceived. The Roman Catholics say that the seventh commandment is, thou shalt not steal, while the non-Catholics say is the eighth commandment. But they both have the same commandment. What constitutes stealing? There are three places in the Holy Book where it states very plainly, thou shalt not steal. But what does the Bible explain as to what things pertain to stealing and what is the penalty for doing so? Exodus chapter 22, verses 1 through 4. If a man shall steal an ox or a sheep and kill it and sell it, he shall restore five oxen for an ox and four sheep for a sheep. If a thief be found breaking up and be smitten that he die, there shall no blood be shed for him. If the sun be risen upon him, thou shalt be blood shed for him, for he shall make full restitution. If he have nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. If the theft be carefully found in his hand alive, whether it be an ox or an ass or sheep, he shall restore double. Verse 1. If a man steals a bull, he shall give five bulls for him, which we may presume was no more than his real value, as very few bulls could be kept in a country destitute of horses, where oxen were so necessary to till the ground. A sheep stolen might be recompensed with four out of the flock, whether sheep or goats, so that a goat might be compensated for four sheep or a sheep with four goats. Now, verse 2 is very confusing, and I think, in the King James, the New International Version. If a thief is caught breaking in at night and is struck a fatal blow, the offender is not guilty of bloodshed. The New Living Translation. If a thief is caught in the act of breaking into a house and is struck and killed in the process, the man who killed the thief is not guilty of murder. The above two translations give a better sense of what was meant than the King James does. If a thief is found breaking into a house, especially at night, then he might be killed with no repercussions to the killer. But what if the theft takes place during the daytime? The thief is not to be killed by the owner of the house or farm, for the owner could see who it was that stole his property and restitution could be made. If the thief stole and sold the property, he was restored the value four or fivefold. But if any animals were found alive in his possession, he was to restore double. Israel was an agricultural society in the Old Testament. There were no guns, automobiles, email bank accounts that could be hacked and the accounts stolen, no stock exchange, and other more advanced technologies. This is one reason that a judge was to represent what God's law was saying in each individual case. Israel is now living in an urban society. So how many bulls are stolen every year? How many sheep? Most Israelites don't even see a bull a year, let alone have the opportunity to steal one. But in the days of the Old Testament, bulls were the animals that were used to plow the fields, turn the mills, and perform other very hard, difficult work. They did what the tractor does now. So I think that the judge would be well versed in the word would rule that anyone who steals a tractor would have to pay the same restitution as a person who stole a bull. He would grant restitution to the victim for five times the amount that he paid for the tractor. That's just my opinion. The same judgment could be made about a burglar who enters a person's house in the daylight. Back in the old days, they didn't have a gun. But today, if a person enters another person's home in the daytime with a gun, it'd be self-defense for the owner to kill the intruder. This is just a couple of other situations that would have to be taken into consideration. But who would you consider to be the biggest stealers in all the nation? What job description would you give of these thieves? I would say Deuteronomy 23:19. Thou shalt not lend upon usury to thy brother. Usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Unto a stranger, a racial foreigner, thou mayest lend upon usury. But unto thy brother, thou shalt not lend upon usury, that the Lord thy God may bless thee. God bless America. May bless thee in all that thou settest thy hand to the land, whether thou goest to possess it. The financial institutions of our nation are the biggest thieves in all our land. They lend usury to all the different kinds of people in the land. Where are our banks that are owned by our own people? If we had Christian banks, they would not be allowed by God's law to charge usury or interest to their white brothers. They could charge interest to anyone else of another race. Doesn't this show that all races are not equal? If we had Christian banks that did this, then wouldn't our nation be blessed? Germany did that, by the way. This is the main reason that North Korea is the enemy of the United States, or is it rather the enemy of Israel? The Jewish Rothschild Bank is not in North Korea. It is only one of only three nations in the world that lacks this bank. Is war with North Korea coming? To be continued, blessed be the Lord God of Israel.